Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of A Very Stable Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Reed. You can follow me on Twitter at NiceReedSteve. You can follow the podcast at A Very Stable Pod. You can also check out our stuff over at Stampede Blue, or you can check us out on the website at stampedeblue.com. So this week, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs game. Just go over a little bit of what happened, some thoughts, insights, stuff like that. We're going to talk about also the Tennessee game coming up and why I think this might be a good opportunity for the Colts to take a little bit of a lead in the division there against Tennessee, even though Jacksonville is now currently the favorite there in the division after rolling off a couple wins. So first off, I'm going to talk about the Kansas City game. So I just want to say congratulations to the Colts fans. Like, you came out and it was wild. The atmosphere in the stadium was just absolutely electric. It was awesome to be there, to see everybody kind of go wild in there and just see everything going. I know I was pretty hoarse after the game from yelling. So it's always good to see everybody show up and have a big part. And I know the players really feed off of that. So it was great to see everybody there. It was also fun to see, you know, people make a big deal because Kansas City travels well in terms of their fans. So people will probably make a big deal that there were quite a few Kansas City fans up in the rafters, and it's so easy to spot them because they wear red, and it's very easy to see like little dots of red or small groupings of red in a huge sea of blue. So I thought that the Colts fans really came out, though, and played well. One thing I want to start off by talking about is I've heard a lot of people and analysts say, oh, the Colts didn't win this game. Kansas City lost it. And that really frustrates me because Kansas City had two turnovers in this game. Two turnovers. It's not like they fumbled away. And one of them was the interception there at the end of the game. They had one fumble that was recovered during normal game. And the Colts had one fumble. So the Colts took advantage of their fumble. Kansas City also took advantage of the Colts fumble, scored a touchdown on that play to go up 14-10. Colts took advantage of their fumble to score their first touchdown. So I get a little frustrated when I hear national analysts talk about it and say, oh, the Colts didn't win this game. The Colts had effectively one turnover during the game. Kansas City lost this game, yes, but the Colts also won it. And if you look at the breakdown of it, you know, people will talk about, oh, well, Kansas City, they had a missed extra point. Okay, that's fine. They had a two-point conversion that they converted. So it's really a wash there, even though, let's be real, that two-point conversion looked really similar to the Kylan Granson fourth down call that they said was short. It looked identical with the exception of the color of the jerseys. And so, you know, you look at that and you say, okay, well, the missed extra point, it is what it is. But they also had the two-point conversion, so it pretty much nullified that. Then you say, oh, well, they missed a field goal. Yeah, you know what? They did miss a field goal, but on the drive immediately before that, they went for it fourth and 11 at the Indianapolis 24. So like a 42-yard field goal there. That's a pretty common field goal. Instead of kicking the field goal to take yourselves up 20-13, they went for it and they didn't get it. So you immediately start to pull confidence from your kicker right there, a kicker that you have brought up that's like a replacement kicker for Harrison Butker. You've got a guy that comes in and you just don't show faith in him. And so, yeah, okay, Amendola came in to kick a 34-yard field goal later and missed it. So you can count that, I guess, as an issue there on a missed field goal. But Kansas City decided not to show faith in their kicker. So that's on them. They decided not to show faith. Don't tell me that's the Colts' fault, like that the Kansas City lost it. They went for 4th and 11, like from the Indianapolis 24. Like that was a stupid decision. And so you can't sit here and say that that's the Colts didn't stop. The Colts stopped them on that play. So I'm sorry, but Kansas City, they didn't lose this game. You also had Kansas City. You can talk about, oh, well, you know, they had that fourth down that they went for on 4th and 11 and Kansas City didn't convert. Guess what? The Colts went for it twice on 4th down, 4th and 1 and didn't convert. So you had the Matt Ryan got sacked on one of them. Right there, and believe the other one. So yeah, Matt Ryan got sacked on 4th and 1, and fumbled the ball away, and then I believe Jonathan Taylor recovered it, but still it was a loss. So rather than give it to Jonathan Taylor, Frank Reich decides to call a play action pass and not block one of the guys, and Matt Ryan gets sacked. So that's downs, and you know what? Kansas City scored a touchdown, Kansas City ended up not converting that time. And so they ended up doing downs. That was their 4th and 11 play. So it was immediately right after it. Kansas City scored a touchdown on that play. So you've got that issue right there where the Colts went for it on 4th and 1, didn't convert. And then you had the one where Jonathan Taylor got stood up because they decided to hand it off on 4th and 1 and go right at Chris Jones, which to me wasn't the best decision. This is something that I've talked about before is, I get really frustrated with Frank Reich because a lot of times I think his decision to go for it is the right one, given the time and the distance and the down and distance on 4th and 1, 4th and 2. My question has pretty much been the play calling on it. So again, I'm going to get into this a little bit later, but I get really tired of hearing this narrative that Kansas City lost this game and the Colts didn't win it. I'm sorry, but both teams, they made equal amounts of errors. They made equal amounts of turnovers. So the Colts won this game. They made the plays when they needed to and put themselves in a position to win the game. They won this game. Kansas City just throughout the entire day, Kansas City didn't make plays. Like if you look at it, you can't tell me Kansas City, lost this game. That Patrick Mahomes went 20 for 35 for 262 yards, one touchdown, one interception. Like, that's because the Colts defense played really, really well in this game. So I look at that and I say, this is ridiculous. The Colts won this game, and that's plain and simple. It's not the Colts didn't win it. Kansas City lost it. No, the Colts won this game. They made plays when they needed to, and they took advantage of the issues that Kansas City had. That first fumble to start the game and that punt return from Sky Moore that the Colts recovered and ended up scoring. Yeah, that happens in a game. And you know what? Matt Ryan had a fumble right after that Kansas City scored. That's a 1-1 knockoff right there. So I'm sorry, but I just have an issue with people saying that. So we'll talk about this now. I mentioned it before, Frank Reich and his issues. My concern with Frank Reich is he gets too cute. The first 2 weeks of the season, he was too cute. And, don't get me wrong, he's a handsome guy, everything like that. He's too cute on his play calling. He tries to overthink things rather than just doing what makes the most sense at the time. So when there's when it's 4th and half a yard or less, it should be a quarterback sneak. I think the quarterback sneak is maybe the most successful play in football from 4th and 1 and or less. Like that's, you should just do it. It's what happens with Tom Brady. Tom Brady made it a huge part of his game. No matter where they were at on the field, New England ran 4th and 1 with a quarterback sneak, and they always, always converted. So I have an issue with that. You know, these cute play action passes, yeah, okay, sometimes they can work. But if you're just trying to move the ball, just do quick plays. Like Jonathan Taylor, I get handing it off to him, but handing it off to him and having him try to go up over the top when you've got two massive dudes there in the middle of Kansas City's defensive line, Like Chris Jones, he was the best player for Kansas City, and quite honestly, he was probably the best player for the Colts. They're being able to send off the that third down, getting called for abusive language, which I'm still wondering what was said there, because I don't know how often referees hear the trash talking that happens and all of that smack talking that goes on throughout the game, especially outside the offensive line. Like cornerbacks and wide receivers are notorious for all of the stuff they talk to each other for. So I'm very, very surprised to see somebody get dinged for abusive language. Like you see it for taunting, different things like that, where the guy just stands over somebody. That one makes sense to me, but abusive language? I'm just interested to find out what that is. So the next thing I want to go into is the offensive line struggle. So the Colts, obviously, there's some issues there. They've been having issues all season in terms of offensive line and communication. I don't know. I think it has to do with Matt Ryan and Ryan Kelly and that center quarterback communication that goes on, because Matt Ryan is still new to the system and still trying to figure out the protections, things like that. You hope that he's starting to come along. And quite honestly, that fourth quarter, it seemed like he was getting a lot more time. So I think they were able to be able to put the protection in place for him, and he was able to get a good idea of where they were coming from. And the Kansas City Chiefs ran some pretty elaborate blitz packages on him to get guys free. So that's not necessarily surprising. They're an aggressive defense and in terms of their blitzes. And so I'm not super surprised that they were able to get some pressure, but there were some times where guys were just coming wide open, and that just seemed like a struggle. So I'll be interested to see how the Colts end up resolving that issue, because it was a pretty big issue for the offensive line, and it seems like it could be a big issue going forward. People will get on Danny Pinter for this game because he allowed a lot of quarterback pressures, but quite honestly, Kansas City was doing the smart play there and moving Chris Jones, who's an all-pro defensive tackle, over top of Danny Pinter rather than putting him over top of Quentin Nelson, which I think for Kansas City's sake was a really smart move. You can't blame them for that, because Danny Pinter is clearly the weakest offensive lineman there on the team. So, of course, they're going to line up their best defensive lineman on Danny Pinter there. My concern is that they need to get this thing fixed in terms of where Ryan Kelly is going to help out with that. And the trouble is, if Ryan Kelly is having to go over and help Danny Pinter, that's going to leave that spot right in the middle of the defense, right in the middle of the offensive line at that A gap, for guys to start sending blitzes. And it's going to be right in Matt Ryan's face. And I'm concerned with how they're going to handle that. So I think they're probably going to need to start leaving a running back in or leaving a tight end, so then they can go ahead and block off and be able to get some help over there with Danny Pinter, not with Ryan Kelly, maybe more so with Braden Smith. Maybe you see this as a Mo'Ali Cox game coming up. The other thing I want to talk about from the Kansas City games, Matt Ryan, he was okay. My problem is he's holding the ball a little bit long. I'm not sure whether that is just familiarity with the system, with the wide receivers, things like that. You saw it in the fourth quarter. He was starting to throw some really good balls to Alec Pierce and some timing route stuff. So I'll be interested to see how that keeps developing, because Alec Pierce, there was a throw in that fourth quarter where Alec Pierce wasn't even out of his route, had just hit the top of his route, and Matt Ryan had already let the ball go. So he had a lot of faith in Alec Pierce to make the right read and then get out and make the catch. And he did. So I'm excited for that and to see this start to develop between the two. You already see the chemistry with Michael Pittman Jr. and Matt Ryan. So that's not something I'm too concerned about. I was a little intrigued by the lack of usage of Nyheim Hines. I thought that was really interesting that he didn't get as much play as I thought he would. Jelani Woods played really well in limited snaps. He obviously had the two touchdown passes. That's what they kind of thought he would be, at least this rookie year, is a tight end that just catches touchdown passes. That to use him as a red zone target, it's that big basketball body, and you can put out there Jelani Woods, Mo'Ali Cox, Michael Pittman Jr., and you've got three receivers that are all, or even, and even Michael Strawn, you've got four receiving options that are all 6'4 and above, and two of them with hands that are like basically as wide as the football is long. So it's, you've got a lot of options there with those guys. A couple guys I also wanted to mention that played really well were Rodney Thomas. He ended up getting a ton of snaps. He got 81% of snaps, and he really kind of took over after Julian Blackman went down with his injury. I was a little bit surprised because I thought Nick Cross would be the guy that would take that over, but Nick Cross only got one snap on defense and got a couple more special teams plays, but I kind of expected him to take over there as the free safety role once Julian Blackman went down. But Ronnie Thomas stepped in and played really, really well. And so you can't think of that. And then the other one I want to point out is Isaiah Rogers. We've been talking about the first 2 weeks of the season, while how he had gotten no snaps on defense. And so it was really confusing because he's very clearly their number two corner in terms of coverage and coverage ability. And you saw it last year, you saw it in the preseason, and yet he didn't play. So he played 24 snaps this past week, 38% of snaps on defense. And I think it really showed that they were just a better defense with him in there. So I'm glad that they were able to get him in on that. You're seeing Dio Odangbo start to get some snaps. I think he got like 20 to 25 snaps this week. And so, or 20% of snaps, so 13 snaps this week, according to Pro Football Stats. So I'm interested to see him and how he develops. Remember, this is effectively Dio Odangbo's rookie year for him. So you're not going to see him come out and play a ton off the bat, because really this is his first year coming back from the Achilles injury. So this is effectively his rookie year. So I think seeing him get about 20 to 25% of snaps on defense is actually really good for him. And it's a good steady progress for him. So I'm excited for that. That's going to wrap up for what we're going to talk about for Kansas City this week. Again, I was really excited to see that the crowd really showed up to play. I was really frustrated to see the national media not give the Colts credit for what they did. The Colts won that game. It wasn't Kansas City lost it. Both teams made basically similar amounts of errors, and the Colts made the plays to win. So I'm sorry, the Colts won that game. And I'm interested to see how the offensive line starts to develop over the course. And I'd like to see these rookies continue to develop in the way that they have so far on offense with Jelani Woods and Alec Pierce. So I want to also mention again, I keep bringing awareness to this. I want everybody to go to abbyandlibby.org to check that out and check out, see if you have any information to help their families kind of find closure to this situation. There's over $300,000 reward for it. You can call the tip line or send an email to the tip thing that's on there. So go ahead and check that out if you get an opportunity. Next, I want to talk about the Tennessee game coming up. This is a big divisional game for the Colts. Tennessee finally got their first win by knocking off a winless Josh Snake Daniels-led Las Vegas Raiders. So if there was any team in the league that I couldn't be happier more that they were winless, it would be the Raiders and Josh McDaniels, the Snake in person form. So I'm happy for them. I'm sad that Tennessee finally got a win. I was hoping that they would just continue to lose. As of right now, the Colts are currently half a game out of the division lead. Jacksonville Jaguars are currently winning the division with a record of 2-1. The Colts obviously sit at 1-1-1. If you would have told me that if you told me that in the preseason that the Colts would beat the Chiefs in week three, I would just assume that the Colts are 3-0 at that point, because who loses 24-0 to the Jaguars and then comes back out and beats arguably a top three team in the AFC in the Kansas City Chiefs? So Tennessee is sitting at 1-2. They're now currently half a game behind the Colts. The Colts have an opportunity to move 1.5 games up on Tennessee and take an edge in terms of the division record for them. So I'm excited to see what the Colts have in terms of options here. In terms of, you know, the Colts have an opportunity here to take a pretty significant step to help them at least pass the Titans in the division. They've still got to play catch up to the Jaguars. You hope that the Jaguars end up coming back down to earth. But the things that I'm looking for in this Tennessee game, Taylor Lewan, the Tennessee Titans left tackle, is out for the season. Now, they just recently signed former Colts LaRaven Clark. So if I am Gus Bradley, I am sending crazy amounts of blitzes and pressures over there on LaRaven Clark's side, because I think you might be able to take advantage of that if he's the one that's getting the playing time. Taylor Lewan is such a big loss for the Titans. He was a huge part of their running game and able to get out and screen passes and things like that for Derrick Henry. So I think that the Colts are going to have a bit of – they're going to have some options there in terms of being able to push the pressure on the Titans, push the pressure on Ryan Tannehill. If you can get pressure with four on Ryan Tannehill and still continue to stop Derrick Henry, because the Colts – I want to mention this. I forgot to mention it before, but Grover Stewart in the Kansas City game was a menace, and he's been a menace all season. If he can continue to play this way throughout this week's game, I think the Colts have a great opportunity to really stunt Derrick Henry and kind of put that argument that he is back to form to bed. He really hasn't had a great game so far this season. So I'm honestly surprised that people are talking about Derrick Henry as being the guy back again. So it's just kind of weird when you look at it. Through three games, he has 192 rushing yards. So it's just a little bit over 60 yards a game. So I'm sorry, but that's not a 64 yards a game, I think, right around there, 65 yards a game. That's not King Henry. That's not what you expect from a guy that they say is the number one running back in the league. So I'm excited to see this defense kind of match up against him and see where they can go. The one guy that I'm actually worried about from the Tennessee Titans perspective is not Derrick Henry, but Hilliard. Dontrell Hilliard, if they give him some play, he's got an opportunity, because he gets the ball in space and is able to take those checkdowns and get some yardage after that. So I'd be a little bit concerned about him. And Treylon Burks really hasn't shown much so far. Robert Woods has been their most effective receiver, but they don't have that guy like they did with A.J. Brown to be able to just get open. Like, A.J. Brown was a guy that if you just threw the ball his way, he was going to come down with it. And you had a faith that no matter what the matchup was, he was going to win it one-on-one and he was going to make a big play. So I'm interested to see how Tennessee decides to try to attack this Colts defense, because it is a different defense than what they've done in the past. So they're not going to get those free releases off the line of scrimmage like they have in Matt Eberflus's defense. One of the big things, I think, for the Colts this week is to try to get Jonathan Taylor back going again. He's slowed down the past couple weeks. You know, it's a little bit concerning because you really want him to show up and have these big games. He hasn't had that opportunity. He's had, you know, I mean, let me rephrase. He's looking at 286 yards on the year, so about 95, just under 100 yards per game. So it's clear that he's better than Derrick Henry in every aspect of the game at this point. And so I just want to add that in there for the Titans fans that might be listening to this. Derrick Henry is not as good as Jonathan Taylor. I'll let that sit for a second. Okay, I think you guys might be done screaming at your radio. That's fine. So one big thing is Tennessee's defense allows big explosive plays to running back. So I think this is an opportunity for Jonathan Taylor to really have a big game. And I think that he's going to get that chance this week. I think this is his breakout game for the season. I really do. I think the offensive line is starting to figure itself out. I think that Jonathan Taylor, now after having a couple games where they've really focused on taking him away, now that Matt Ryan's starting to get a better handle on this offense, I think that Jonathan Taylor is going to get an opportunity to make some big plays. I'd also look to Nyheim Hines to make some big plays here. So, because I think that Tennessee is going to be so focused on Jonathan Taylor that they might forget a little bit about Hines. So I expect to see the Colts run a lot of two-back sets. So 21 personnel, 22 personnel, where you've got two running backs and one or two tight ends, respectively. I think that you're going to see a lot more of that than what you normally would with the Colts. And I think Naeem Hines is going to get that opportunity to have a big day as well. My bet, though, is that Jonathan Taylor is going to have his breakout game this season here this time. So if you get an opportunity to, I would highly recommend trying to trade for Jonathan Taylor in fantasy leagues. He's now had two straight weeks of poor games. I think you should try to go get him if you can. And I'd give up somebody that, you know, maybe a little bit better player at, like, in terms of stats wise at this point in the season. But I just think Jonathan Taylor is about to, like, start to take off. So I would go look to grab him if you get an opportunity. A couple things I want to – I think Michael Pittman Jr. has an opportunity to have a big game. But the one thing that the Colts have to do, and I kind of alluded to this earlier in talking about the Kansas City games, is they have to find a way to stop Simmons. So Simmons has been just an absolute game wrecker in terms of Jeffrey Simmons, the all-pro defensive tackle, who I really wanted the Colts to draft back in his year, but he didn't. He obviously went to the Titans and that. So Jeffrey Simmons is like Chris Jones, but better. And so I think Simmons is going to be a huge handful for Danny Pinter to take care of. I'm a little worried that he's going to struggle with Jeffrey Simmons. He's such a good defensive tackle. He can collapse the pocket. He can make that play on the running back as he's going in. I think the Colts' best options at this point is going to be running outside the tackles rather than running in between the tackles and this. Or if you want to run behind Quentin Nelson and try to wall off Jeffrey Simmons from being able to get to him, that might be your better option, running between Quentin Nelson and Ryan Kelly and trying to make it happen that way. So that would be my big concern for this game. And I preface that by saying, you know, I can only hope that Jeffrey Simmons makes the same mistake that Chris Jones does and gives the Colts a third down conversion for free, because he's just being, you know, has abusive language, that kind of thing. I think the Colts, from their standpoint, it would be huge if they were able to get Darius Leonard back. My hope is that he's progressing to playing this week. There's not been any kind of announcement made by the team on where he's at, but you got to think that they're hoping that he gets back here soon. If you saw him on the sidelines in the Kansas City games, he was moving pretty well, jumping up and down, getting excited. So hopefully he's starting to feel better. He's able to get back. This week of practice is going to be huge for him. So I'm looking forward to seeing him potentially get back this week. I'm crossing my fingers, because again, I think this defense, they were able to shut basically Patrick Mahomes down to 262 yards. It's wild. I think the stat that ESPN stat, or I forget which stat site put it out, but the Chiefs, when their Chiefs defense and the 39 games that Patrick Mahomes has played since he's taken over, when the defense allows less than 20 points, 24 points or something like that, or 21 points, the Chiefs are 37-2, and those two losses are to the Colts. So that's just wild to me. For an offense, I want to see the offense keep feeding Alec Pierce. I think that he's got an opportunity to be really, really good in this offense. It's clear that Matt Ryan trusts him more than Paris Campbell or anybody else, anybody outside of Michael Pittman. Alec Pierce is a guy that he trusts. So I want to see him take that step forward and get some more usage, see him get a few more targets, a few more catches. It's clear that he's able to make plays. I mean, that jump ball that he got to get them off the end line there in the first half of that game, or in the first half of the Kansas City game. And then you add on the play there on that last drive where Ryan threw the ball to him before he'd even came out of his break. It was just really, really good to see from a fan standpoint, to see them starting to make those plays. So that's really all I got for you this week. Again, great, great win this week in Kansas City. Colts sitting at 1-1-1, one half game out of first place in the AFC South against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and a half game up on the Tennessee Titans coming into this big week. I think the Colts have an opportunity to kind of take a hold of the race against the Tennessee Titans this week. So I'm hoping that they're able to pull it out. And this Kansas City is a kind of a taking off point for them, where they've really put it all together. So thank you all again for listening. I hope you have a great week. Remember, this is a very stable podcast. You can follow me at Nice Read Steve on Twitter. You can follow the podcast at A Very Stable Pod. Check us out at StampedeBlue.com with all the writers we've got over there, or take a listen to any of the other podcasts that you've got going on this week. Remember to rate and review us 5 stars if you get a chance. And I hope to talk to you after another big Colts win next week. Have a great one.